And welcome to our program. It's a pleasure to have you with us as we are going to talk about currency. I was going to say current events, maybe currency events is maybe the way we'll phrase it. Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And our guest today on the program is the author of Soul Currency, Investing Your Inner Wealth for Fulfillment and Abundance, Ernest Chu. And he's going to join us in just a moment as we bring you this program every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. We stream live on the internet. If you are not able to hear us on the radio, you can certainly pick us up on the internet at richarddugan.com. That's richarddugan.com. And we'd love to have you tune in. And right now we're going to bring on Ernest. Welcome to our program. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
The subject, obviously, is way too timely, but in a way it's kind of timeless because it doesn't really make any difference what the economic conditions are locally or globally. These kinds of principles that you've laid out in the Soul Currency, they apply because it's dealing with the S-O-U-L, soul, of us.
Yes, that's right.
So let's define some terms here. What is soul currency?
Well, as you probably know, I spent the better part of 20 years in the financial arena. I was a member of the New York Stock Exchange when I was 25 years old, and I actually began my career as a columnist for the Wall Street Journal, writing about the bond and financing markets. So I know quite a bit about currency, and as an investment banker, I raised about $150 million and added about $1.5 billion worth of value to the companies that I was involved with. And one of the things that I recognized was that currency, as we know it, financial currency, that we think is very real, is really nothing more than symbols and agreements. And we have found this to be very real because we have found ways that are very imaginative to measure them, and that we're always reminding ourselves to measure this in some form or another, so that it becomes so much of a part of our reality that we think it's really real currency. But in fact, the real currency, soul currency, is really what is within us, and not only that, but it's also what surrounds us in terms of the source energy that's always around us. And so usually what happens is that when you really begin to understand how financial capital or financial currency is created, it first is created from within. It first comes from an inspiration or a determination or a shift in the way that you look at things. And that energy begins to go and to coalesce into situations where you can begin to create agreements and symbols. And we call that sometimes successful companies. We sometimes call it a very profitable trade or a good investment or things of that type. But those are the things that are really important. And soul currency is a lot more important and a lot more real than financial currency.
And we're going to talk an awful lot about that in this program today in terms of how to, I'm going to use the word acquire, but that's not quite the right term, and we'll talk more about that as we continue here. But you have fairly well established yourself, obviously, as you've already stated, in the financial industry. Is what's happening as we are speaking nothing more than a cycle? Or maybe to put it another way, it is sort of a reset of the physical, financial, or economic manifestation of an inward currency. Because we're talking about the inward, but it then manifests on the outside. Is that what we're looking at?
Well, I think what we're looking at is, since our reality really is created sort of as collectively as we all contribute to that reality, I think that what you're seeing is a kind of cleansing. But you see, it's also like we've had these things happen to us before.
Mm-hmm.
And if you recall, maybe the sort of very early 70s, where the stock market actually went to about 632, and the Penn Central went bankrupt. Several of the major brokerage firms went bankrupt. But no matter what you invested in, since interest rates were rising, you lost money. And essentially, nothing that you could do really prevented what was really at that time thought of as a, not only a recession, but things like the term stagflation was coined, because the prime rate went up to about 20%, actually higher than 20%, which meant that both bonds and stocks went down. But you also had no growth and you had inflation. So this was, at least at that point, that was sort of a very gentle knock on the door to our sort of economic adjustments that have to be done. And now today, we're, the knocking is even louder, and it's affected our financial institutions and the very things that we depend on for commerce and the economy to survive. And so then you have to ask yourself, well, is what is being done going to be sufficient? And when I talk about sole currency, I'm talking about changes being made from really the inside, from thought, from literally from understanding how we got there in the first place and making a change. Because obviously insanity is doing the same things over and over again and expecting different results.
And that's what I keep hearing over and over again. And we're going to talk more about that and trying to live a more sane, peaceful, joyous, and healthy life as we continue talking with Ernest Chu. He is the author of Soul Currency, and we want you to stay with us. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and we want you to stay right where you are. You can also check us out at richarddugan.com. That's Richard, D-U-G-A-N.com. We are walking and talking together. We are not separate. It's not you and me. It's us. It's not us and them. It's we. We're collectively in this situation, whatever it may be. And I say whatever it may be because each one of us has a different perspective. And Ernest Chu has his perspective as well in terms of investing your inner wealth fulfillment and abundance. And we're going to talk about Soul Currency, his book. And Ernest, we've got a long segment that we're going to fill here with hopefully some good information for people, giving them, as we like to say, new paradigms to create a new world to fulfill their dreams. We've got choices. And really, I've heard this said that when things start to kind of tumble, whatever it is, it's not just the economy, you know, your relationships, they, you know, they get all shaken up. And that's really what it is. It's a shake up or a wake up, whatever you want to call it. It gives us the opportunity to do something different. You ended the last segment with a very profound quote. It's cliche-ish, but it's still very profound. At the heart of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. I say it's like putting a video into the videotape player and expecting a different ending in the movie. I can't use that analogy with DVDs because they have alternate endings on the darn things now. But tell us a little bit about your background. I mean, you went into it a little bit, but more your background as to how you came into this, I'm going to say, more metaphysical mindset or heart set that brought about Soul Currency.
Well, sometimes you have to have these wake-up calls, and I'm very familiar with wake-up calls because I had one, and it was a wake-up call that got my attention because it was centered around money. And I had woke up one day literally and found that the company that I was involved with, that I had my made some significant investments in, had pretty much hitched my wagon there, expecting that this was going to be one of the biggest successes of my life. I woke up one day and found that my partner, the chief stockholder of the company and someone that I had really depended on, ended up having some background issues that hadn't been disclosed, and the financing melted away, the company melted away. I had been so enthused about it that I had guaranteed a lot of the debt in the company. I had carried expenses on my credit cards and so forth, which are things that I don't recommend people do, but I ended up doing it anyway. And the end result was I was $1 million in debt, had no way to really pay that back. I didn't even have a job at that point. I lost my house. I had to sell everything that was near and dear to myself, me, and of any value. And I had what I thought was nothing. And so I was lucky to find a place that where I had one room, and they were kind enough to sort of let me go month to month and pay them whenever I could. This was a wake-up call for me, because I really began to see that I had to do something about it. And the other further complicating factor was I've been in the financial arena for a long time, and that these are skills that I know quite well, and I anticipated I would continue to be in that business because I enjoyed it and I was good at it and had a lot of experience. But if I filed bankruptcy, that probably wasn't going to happen. So I chose not to file bankruptcy, and here I was with $1 million in debt. And if you know what that's like, essentially, if you've got a job all of a sudden and you could pay $3,000 a month toward reducing your debt, it would probably take you a good 200 years before you'd even begin to make a dent in that debt. So all of a sudden, I just was, I hadn't really even thought of it that way. I was looking more like, I've got to find a solution.
Well, and you and I
ended up at a church or a spiritual center that really was the same kind of mindset that Napoleon Hill writes about in Think and Grow Rich.
Mm.
The same kind of mindset that that Norman Vincent Peale talks about the power of positive thinking, and the same kinds of things that Tony Robbins talks about, or Mark Victor Hansen in their writings. I didn't know any of that at that point. I guess I probably did at some sense and needed to be reminded. But literally, that was the, defining moment that really made my way of thinking a lot different and started me really on a more spiritually oriented inner journey, looking at the outer world. But I come from a very grounded place, so I'm not looking at this as a very airy-fairy way of being getting away from reality. But in fact, I began to see this as just because we couldn't see the energies that are putting this together doesn't mean they don't exist. It just means we don't see them.
Well, that's a good point. And you talk about being in debt $1 million. There are a lot of folks out there who only have a few $1,000s in debt, but it feels like $1 million. They can't sleep at night because they can't even make the minimum payments because their wages have been reduced, or even if they've lost their job. I mean, these are the kinds of things folks are facing. But you've been there, you've done that, and you've come out the other side.
Yes, and I did. And it took me a very bleak time. I mean, I know what it is. I know what these folks are going through and more. I mean, I've not only lost my house and ended up in a very small little room and had virtually no belongings to me. I basically went through the grocery store and couldn't buy 99% of what I saw. So that really gives you a perspective on what it's like. But at that time, I never surrendered in terms of my determination to find a way out. And that's kind of an important thing as well, is to not give in and not allow yourself to say, hey, I'm done. I have nothing. I need some kind of miracle. I did need a miracle. I asked for a miracle. I started to realize that the only other way I could find a miracle was really through prayer. So I did that. I had never really given that much thought to it, and all of a sudden now this was one of the remaining options that I had, and I certainly did that. But what I also saw was that I had it within my own power, the inner things that I had, the inner assets that I had, which I talk about in Soul Currency, that really can change the world for you. And those are the things that we take for granted. You know, as an example, somebody says, boy, you have such a gift for gab, or you can take a very complex subject and make it very simple, or you have quite an imagination, you really can say things that are just out of the box. Well, we all like that. We love compliments to some degree. It makes us feel good, and we remember how good that feels. And when you think about, well, you have so many divine gifts, well, you know, the whole idea of a gift is not so much the value of the gift, but the experience of having received it and feeling loved or acknowledged or just feeling good about what that really stood for. So when you get into a situation where you are really in a dire place in your life, you can't really draw upon that experience. But if you really look at and really start to get that what you have, all the things that you kind of take for granted, are really assets. They are as much assets as, say, having a portfolio of real estate or stocks. And even though that's probably not necessarily a great thing to have right now, those things are regarded as real. They're regarded as valuable. And when you mention the word asset, people think in terms of something that's worthwhile. And so I talk about spiritual assets, and assets like these are things like ways, imagination, and guidance. Those are two of the major categories of assets. Basically, your cultivated skills and network, those are also real assets, and people can see those. And also, I think to a large degree, a lot of what we put moral judgments on, for instance, determination, integrity, and so forth, we don't see them as assets. We think of those as things that define us as a good person or bad. And if you start with the assumption that you're already a good person, that being selfless is really you get rid of a lot of the concepts that you're being selfish or whatever it is, but you take a much bigger view of yourself. And when you do that, that begins to start the chain of energy that literally says, hey, I'm in charge. I can create my inner economy in a way that doesn't exist in the outer world. Because if you're waiting for the outer world to tell you you're valuable or that you're loved, you're going to be waiting a while. Because basically,
that's true.
That doesn't happen. You teach the world how to value you. You teach the world how to love you.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. If you're waiting for the economy to tell you that you're going to be all right economically, you're going to be waiting a while, and you're going to be feeling like a victim while you're waiting.
I know that when I first started in this business and I started doing little side jobs, I was just more interested in doing the work. So I really undercharged people. But most of the people that I worked did the work for, they didn't have a lot, but they had some, and they were able to help me out a little bit here and there, and I did the projects for them. And then I was told this, that, you know, you're undercutting yourself. You know, you're cheating yourself out of what you really do deserve. You are worth much more than what you're charging. So the first time I said, okay, I'm going to set this rate, and I tried it once, and they accepted it, and it blew me away. I'm going, really? Okay. Because I guess I, even at that point, when I said, here's what my rate is, I still didn't believe that I was worth that.
Right.
And so we have to come to that place where we not just believe or think, we have to know deep down inside, hey, look, I am worth it. I am a valued person. What I have to offer, whatever it is, and you kind of ran down a couple of lists of things there, whatever those talents, abilities, or as you say, assets are, I'm worth it. And at the same time, you know, we don't want to get too full of ourselves and say, look, I'm good at this and I want to be paid, you know, a gazillion dollars for this thing. When you were putting this material for this book together, the book entitled Soul Currency, if you're looking for that on the internet, and Ernest Chu being our guest here on Tell Me Your Story, Ernest, as you put this book together, how much of our, I'll say, intuition needs to be a part of the process of sort of picking up and if we need to, starting over again? Or if we don't have to start over, I don't know, maybe sort of, is there a need or a process of protecting ourselves from the outer economic melees that may befall us somewhere down the road if it hasn't yet?
Well, the first thing that you have to understand is that there are people in this economy that are prospering and thriving.
Mm-hmm.
And these aren't all people that are taking advantage of things. For instance, I'm at a natural foods expo this weekend, and that industry as a whole seems to be thriving. The companies seem to be thriving. They may be growing at a slower rate, but they're not in decline. They're not facing bankruptcy. They are going to be leaving with more customers than they had when they came, and they were very successful. The attendance is what it was last year and more. So that there's an example right there. But there are other industries and other companies and other people that are doing well. And essentially, their idea of what the economy is doing, they're not letting themselves buy into all of this doom and gloom and so forth. And this isn't to say that some of these industries that haven't changed, like the automobile industry, for example, or some of the banking industries or the mortgage industry and things of that type, which has been subject to a lot of excesses, that doesn't mean that there isn't some kind of correction that occurs, some kind of natural compensating, movement that really causes some of these industries to contract or to change significantly. And unfortunately, the politicians really look at the ramifications. They want something, the changes that are going on. They want to be able to immediately help these things. And so often they'll throw money at it, and this may be a good idea, but my belief is that it's likely to extend this period of time rather than to really put out the fire, but it's just allowing it to smolder and perhaps not be so noticeable, but it's still out, the fire's still burning.
It goes back to what you said before the break, the height of insanity. And isn't that what we always seem to do, throw money at a problem, whatever it is, whether it's an economic problem, an educational problem, whatever it is, we throw money at it figuring that's going to solve it. And has it ever, really? I mean, honestly? And it really hasn't. In terms of, as you term it, a fire, kind of ironic you phrase it that way, when we've had so many fires here along the Central Coast in the last 18 months or so that we've all been facing. And I tell you what, it brings you close to home in a hurry as far as your mindset, as far as what's really, really important. I mean, you forget about all of the other stuff and you just start thinking about, okay, I need to protect family and help the neighbors if I can and so forth. That seems to be where a lot of people are shifting to now. I mean, yes, some of them are very concerned. We hear about on the news those who lost their jobs. But at the same time, we're also hearing a coming together. Is that one of the attributes of this process?
Well, the attributes of the process are that essentially in the very beginning alone, we sometimes think of ourselves as having to do it all by ourselves. As we share the experience of perhaps dealing with a lot of change, we all recognize that we're all the same, that we are connected, and that through each of us helping each other and using our social networks, for example. So if you're one of these people and you're looking at the economy and you just either are about to lose your job or have lost it or are just in fear about things, one of the first things you do is to start using your network of people. You know a lot more people than you think you do, and there are many people who are interested in perhaps helping you, but they need to know how they can help you and what it is that you're looking to create. And often you don't even know that yourself. You have to really begin to sever what I would call the chains of fear every time you think about money. Mm. So if you actually can visualize yourself with a giant pair of scissors, severing the chain of fear from the thought that you have about money, or the minute you start thinking about money, fear comes in. So if you can just separate all that, you can then begin to think somewhat more rationally, and you can begin to think things through in a way that will be positive for you.
Well, how about this? Technology has brought us some incredible things, Ernest. And in your example there, it makes me think of the potential value of a certain aspect of our technology. And that's where my next question is leading. Do you see the websites, and we're not here promoting any particular websites, the social websites like the Facebook and the Twitter and all of these others, as that resource that if people have started those kinds of things, they're trying to connect with like-minded people, like-skilled people, et cetera, is that's one of the places that they could go, isn't it, that might assist them in, you know, working through whatever it is they need to until they find that gainful employment or that, or even maybe even more importantly, Ernest, that peace of mind.
Yes. And it gives, it is, the internet is really one of the closest things to oneness. And that's even considering there are some less than conscious ways of acting on the internet. But the internet in general really connects us in ways that we haven't. It shortens the time span. It gets people to know each other in times that would normally take years. It's now measured in weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And people feel that, especially through these social networks, that they particularly get to know you as a human being, as not just an idea. And it also, when you are looking to connect with others, to ask for help, or for to be helpful to someone else, this is all part of that power of social networking.
My guest is Ernest Chu. He is the author of the book Soul Currency, and this book is, of course, available through the various book outlets, Amazon.com and so forth, and your local bookstore. If you'd like to pick up a copy, certainly do so. I think it would be well worth your energy and effort because, you know, regardless of again, what we're going through, we can always use that kind of uplift and encouragement. Ernest, did you ever think that you would be having the background that you do in finance and so forth, writing what I will term as a spiritual or metaphysical book?
Well, 25 years ago, I would have been the last person to ever write a book entitled Soul Currency. If I ever wrote a book that was close to that, it would have been S-O-L-E, which would have been it would have been really all about money.
Hitting the pavement, in other words, kind of
yes.
thing. Yeah.
Yes.
How has your life changed? And I'm talking now more in terms of the book and this pathway, this particular part of your journey. How has that changed?
Well, I've actually been, I don't ever remember a time in my life where I've been this busy with doing things that are really that meaningful for people. In other words, I could be busy going to see a company, or I could be busy having staff meetings and stuff, but that's not the that's not what's happening. A lot of the activity that is, and opportunities that are opening up are speaking opportunities, are opportunities to conduct classes for people that have lost their jobs, and I'm going to be starting a series of classes in Fort Lauderdale to help those people through this time. And there are also lots of opportunities to talk about the book, and we're hoping for some national exposure on some of those types of things, because I think it's an important idea that people need to look at. And right now people are looking at fear, and the acronym for fear is really an acronym for failing economy appearing real.
Uh-huh.
Because your inner economy is really flourishing. You just have to be able to connect to it. And so we're going to be helping people to connect to that.
Well, I know when they talked about the recession of the 1980s, as it was happening, I was telling people, I believe it's an alleged recession. I don't believe it's happening. Now, this wasn't because of some, universal connection that I had, and it was an alleged recession, I wasn't seeing the world around me specifically changing in the ways that I kept hearing on the radio and TV and in the papers. I didn't see it. I never saw it. My income didn't change, but I didn't notice prices going up incredibly and those types of things. And again, I heard the news. So I kept telling, it's an alleged recession. It is an alleged recession. And one of the reports out of the BBC actually said a few months ago that the media has been more responsible for what's been happening. And it kind of goes back to what you were saying about the internet. It takes, instead of years to get to know someone, it takes weeks. Well, now we find out what's going on in the deepest, darkest parts of the rest of the world today. I mean, within minutes, if not hours, instead of days, weeks, months, or years. And it seems to cause everybody to emote in whatever direction they choose to. How do we work towards breaking that affector, if you will?
I believe that the journey starts from within, because that's the closest point between, is a straight line, and that's basically where you would first start. And you would really start by eliminating what I call counterfeit currency.
Mm-hmm.
And counterfeit currency is very much like what it sounds like. You know, counterfeit currency, when you print up these phony $1 bills or $1,000 bills or whatever that money is, you'll get a visit from probably the Treasury Department very quickly. And of course, the rationale is that it's going to affect the integrity of the currency and so forth. But yet there's no law about passing on these phony stories and beliefs. There's a law about screaming fire in a crowded theater, but there's no law about saying life is a struggle, nobody loves you, I'm not good enough. And you pass all these stories around, or you keep these stories in your actions and in your beliefs. And that's really the thing that often undermines any attempt that you make by working hard or by sounding like you're going to be determined. And you are often deterred by the fact that there's an underlying belief that you're never going to make it, that you are not going, you're not worthy of receiving this, that basically you are a victim. And so those are the things, that's the first thing to start with when you start to look at, hey, I'm my economy and my career and my prosperity are not linked to what the GDP is and the consumer price index and the consumer confidence index. These are all figures that are being promoted by the media. It doesn't mean that they're not real in the sense that somebody calculated them. But the consumer confidence index, for example, which they cite, it's about how do you feel about the future? And essentially, if you're really feeling good about yourself, you're seeing opportunity. If you're not feeling good about yourself, you're seeing that you're becoming more and more of a victim, that you're being victimized or being affected by forces outside of you that you can't control.
Ernest Chu is my guest. His book is called Soul Currency, and we encourage you to pick up a copy. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And what we're trying to do is bring you choices today, new choices, different ideas, different ways of looking at things to help you make your dreams come true. And dreams don't stop, do they, Ernest? Regardless of what the conditions are around us, they seem to maybe hold for a short period of time, but they don't stop. They're going to start up again. And then there's some people...
That's quite correct. But, you know, you have other things that we don't call them dreams. We call them sort of visions of yourself. And mm-hmm. So you have to begin to understand that when you put energy toward what you don't have or toward the experience of being frustrated and not succeeding, you are actually creating more of the same. So if you're looking at ways to really envision yourself succeeding, you first have to get rid of the counterfeit currency, which really affects your ability to dream and affects your ability to create. at that point, once you start to realize that most of your success is getting rid of these things, that true enlightenment or true ability to create from a standpoint of wholesomeness is the most powerful place to be, and that comes literally from the process of subtraction rather than addition. Most people don't need to read a lot of books and a lot more, learn a lot about these things, because in fact you already know a lot of this. You just need to be reminded, essentially, that there is nothing really new to learn. There's just a lot to remember of what you already know.
Yeah, well, there's a wonderful little song I was thinking about just the other day, and those are the very lines. It's in every one of us, to be wise. And that's actually the title of the song, I believe. And it's something that we can all grasp. I wanted to ask you, before we go to our next break here, what is the advice that you give to someone who has lost everything, let's just say for the sake of argument and for my locale, in a fire, versus someone who has lost everything due to economic calamity, lost their job, their foreclosure on their home, etc., and the wife and kids, they said, you know, you can't provide, so we're going to live with mother and you're on your own. To someone who just lost their job, they still have a place to live. Maybe they go live with mom and dad, which, of course, is also happening, as opposed to someone who is still working but would really like to work in a different job. How does the advice change for those scenarios?
Well, that's a great question. It does change. There is one sort of thread that you have to be able to connect to, and that is the thread of what I would call hope. In other words, the creation that tomorrow is going to be better, and that the tomorrow after that will be better. Because from the standpoint, if you get so down to recognize that, you know, and start to say, I don't have anything, you then start to create and put energy behind something that is going to be very destructive to what your ability to recover from that kind of circumstance. So if you've lost a job, for instance, and you're living with mother, this could well be that this is an opportunity to finally do something that you would enjoy. And it's ironic that many people who have been downsized, there have been studies where the people have tracked to see, you know, how the people who've been laid off at these jobs, what kind of careers they've had, what have they done. And you found that a lot of these people ended up going into business themselves or really doing something they really enjoyed. And now, of course, they're having to focus on making money. But then they're doing something that they enjoy doing, and they know the market as well, and they end up in careers that perhaps were not making as regularly a paycheck as they would have liked, but the business is growing and they're doing something that gets them up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a lot happier doing that. There are other people that are always worried about money. And those people, I would just simply say to you, you know, work on your inner assets. If you want to go for an interview and get another job and not want to be, for instance, an entrepreneur, then work on those, polish up those spiritual assets. Because as an example, when people talk to you or they interview you, most of the listeners only remember about 8% of what the person said maybe 2 days from now. But they'll remember their impression and what they thought of it and how they felt. And those are the kinds of things that when you go to an interview, a job interview, or you are inspired to look at an industry that perhaps you don't have as much experience in, but you bring a lot of similar skills to it, those are the important things that come from looking inside of you first rather than looking at the want ads and just saying, maybe they're looking for somebody like this or that. The important thing is to really sit down, and it's like the old saying that when you're lost in the woods and you don't really know which direction to go, don't just go wandering in this direction or that direction, but in effect, sit down and really ask for guidance and ask from a standpoint that you have a very clear mind that you can look at that without feeling connected and panicked to what you don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, also the people that are really in financial trouble, and I totally connect with that because I know what that experience is like. You're going to have to deal with tomorrow and the day after and the day after. And, of course, what you have to envision is that you can only deal with what you can deal with. And you can't worry about having to pay everybody off, all your debts. You may have ways that will allow you to alleviate this in some form or another. I chose not to file bankruptcy because that was not an option for me, but it may be an option for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that you've got to really be able to change the way you and your relationship with money as well, because many people have gotten to the point where no matter what happens, they're going to be really dysfunctional as far as money goes. Perfect example, for instance, is the lottery winners. They've been doing surveys on some of the people that won the lottery, and they didn't have a lot of money to begin with, and probably either 2 to 5 years later, they're right back where they were because they've blown it.
Because they've gotten the outer manifestation, but they haven't changed the inner to be able to, shall we say, cope with or manage the outer manifestation.
That's correct.
You know, it's, hey, I really would love $1 million, you know, and I would really love that. Do you know how to handle it? It would be like me saying, I want a Formula One race car. I haven't a clue as how to handle one of those or an atomic submarine. You know, that kind of stuff. I mean,
that's right.
A couple of other questions I have for you. One of them I'm going to save until after the break. You mentioned different references to time. How does, and I will refer to it as the illusion of time for the human mind, how does that play into all of this with soul currency?
Well, the illusion of time is the, as I said, the ability to feel like there's going to be a better tomorrow. So from the standpoint of the feeling that you have, this is kind of a hope. Now, you have to ground that in something. And so hope is really more of a human characteristic as opposed to necessarily an absolute or divine characteristic that's going to really solve the issue or really create major change in your life, because you never really create change from just simply hoping. You create change from action and from changing your thoughts. But what it does do is it enables you to keep, I won't say trying, but to keep in the game in order to be able to finally break through a lot of the things that have limited you, to get past that circumstance that seems so dire, and to understand that if you keep trying and you keep working on this and allowing enough time, you're going to eventually succeed. This is the opposite of Murphy's Law. Murphy's Law says anything go wrong that can go wrong will happen. And the corollary to that is, or really the opposite of that, is really that given enough time, even the bleakest things will begin to work themselves out. And that means you really begin to start to make changes, see this as an opportunity, see what you have as a blessing, and start to work from there.
I think that a lot of people are, even if we can't escape the concept of time in this world, we need to grasp some fundamentals, and that is that you need to look at the long term. The short term always gets you into trouble. There are times when you need to look at the short term, certainly, but when we're talking about things of this nature, it doesn't always miraculously, we'd love to have it happen, and maybe that's another topic for another program, we'd love to have it happen overnight. Sometimes it can. But other times it takes that illusory time concept to manifest some of these things. I say that about the stock market and the investors. These people are so short-term minded, they haven't got a clue. And I keep reminding people when they see the news about the stock market, Yeah, well, if you were to take a look at the graph from the day this thing was created, I don't know, 100 or more years ago, which direction has it gone? Up. Even with the Depression, it went up. So it's not over, folks. It is by far not over. And this program isn't over either. We're going to continue with Ernest Chu and his book, Soul Currency, here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. I want you to stay right where you are. We're coming right back. Talking and talking together with Ernest Chu, author of Soul Currency, here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, bringing you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Ernest, it has been a distinct pleasure to have you on our program. And as we wrap up our broadcast for this Saturday, as we come every Saturday 3 to 4 p.m. and bring you this information, you could be doing a lot of things. You went through the ringer financially in a very material way. And you could be doing a lot of other things, like getting back into the investments and banking and so forth. At least I think you can. And you could go back to remaking the million or more that you owed at that point, and then some. Why this? Because all the other stuff's going on.
Well, that's a good question. I did have five very successful years after that. I accomplished probably more than I had ever expected to, and had been able to accomplish many of the dreams that I had both financially set for myself, as well as being able to create an organization that continued. And so right now, what I really felt was that it gives me so much more satisfaction. It's so worth doing that I realized that whatever that experience was, it was kind of a calling for me. And I in part created that so that I got that, it got my attention. And essentially, I'm really doing a form of really ministry. I'm doing a form of really, I guess if you're Jewish, it's a kind of a series of mitzvahs, but really, it gives me such joy and it gives me such satisfaction to do that. And it's something that money can't buy. And yet, at the same time, I'm helping people to look at their lives and realize that they can find and empower themselves because of what they have inside of them.
Amazing. We thank you so much for sharing your time. What's a website where they can get a hold of you?
You can reach me at either ernestchu.com, which is C-H-U, or you can reach me at www.soulcurrency.org and find out more about the Soul Currency Institute.
Soul Currency.
And one last thing
yes.
is that if you go to soulcurrency.org, there are a series of prayers which you can sign up for. Just give us your email address, and we'll send them to you one a day for 7 days. That they're very similar to the kinds of things that I use to really turn my life around and to really begin to be inspired with the ideas that have comprised the book.
Great. Ernest, thank you so much. Ernest Chu and Soul Currency, and Ernest Chu and SoulCurrency.org. I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you very much for joining us. And love to all. Have a great Saturday.
Start here with me and you. Go to take.